You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room and Foreign Blue and Gold. Pete, how are you doing?
Doing well, my man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I want to, at some point, watch the Kobe detailed stuff, because I guess he's going to now focus on one of the, I think it's the Western Conference games or one of the Conference Finals games. And like, I want, here's the clip I actually really want from Kobe. I want him to like sit down and explain, look, the alternative to cutting the offense was swinging the ball over to Devin George and watching him dribble it off his foot. So I used to just shortcut the system and get myself a mid post. Like, that's the details I want. Him breaking down all this other stuff, like, there are better people at that anyway.
First off, I respect you trying to get out in front of my Kobe reference. It's not going to save you, but I see what you're doing and I respect it. And secondly, yeah, they were not running, you know, blind pig triangle offense for Devin George.
Yeah. I had to clap back before you know, it got to, you had the opportunity to just have a free shot at it. So
I'm all about escalation. So that's
all right. So today's show, we're going to talk about another famed shooting guard, probably the more effective use of $18 million or $20 million than Kobe was at the end of his career. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was signed on a 1-year deal. So we're going to, as usual, talk about the expectations when the Lakers made that signing. We're going to talk about his actual production, and then look ahead to options that he might have with staying with the Lakers. And if he does stay with the Lakers, things that we'd like to see him improve on moving forward. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silver Screen and Roll, Lakers Outsiders. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow Pete on Twitter at Laker Film Room. Let's get to it, though. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was signed. It was a great signing, all things considered, right? Because they just had, what was it, $18 million or $16 million, whatever he wound up signing for, just kind of burning a hole in their pocket. J.J. Redick, I believe, had already signed his similar deal with Philadelphia, so he was kind of off the table and he went for more money anyway. It was a signing that really the Lakers kind of sort of had to make if they wanted to field a semi-respectable roster this season. Would you roll with that thinking, or were you fine either way if they weren't able to get him?
No, they needed a guy like him to. I mean, he was the main guy that they had running off of screens. And in Luke's offense, they've got, is similar to what Nick Young did, right? Where the two very heavily runs off of screens and needs to be in catch and shoot guy. If they didn't have KCP kind of fall into their laps, because what happened was Detroit was able to acquire Avery Bradley, and then they rescinded KCP's qualifying offer a few days into free agency. And so it was kind of like that musical chairs situation where KCP was left standing up without a suitor. And the Lakers kind of swooped in and were able to get him on that 1-year deal. I kind of wonder if part of that was a favor to Clutch Sports and the whole LeBron connection and all of that, and with the amount of money that he was given, because he probably did not have a market even on a 1-year deal at $18 million. Mm-hmm. But I think Lakers were trying to kind of, you know, two birds with one stone on that. But on the court, they needed a guy like him. If they didn't have KCP, they would have needed Josh Hart to come in and hit the ground running as a shooter off of screens in a way that he wasn't ready for. He showed that later in the year, but at the beginning of the year, that would have been a really tough fit. So yeah, that was a very nice, I think, manna from heaven is what Pelinka called it. And he was that.
I believe, now I did a little bit of a reporting on this subject. The Lakers were in on the Avery Bradley sweepstakes. They were willing to send Larry Nance Jr. in a package that would have matched salaries, obviously, to make that all work. I think Corey Brewer was involved in like a future second round pick to get Avery Bradley, and and they thought that they were going to be able to make that work, and it just didn't wind up working out. I think Boston, you know, I think they liked the package that they got, and they were, I think at this point, proven correct, right, with how well Morris has played and the fact that Larry Nance Jr. is now out of the rotation in Cleveland. But if you had to choose one between the other, Avery Bradley or KCP, which would you have preferred if all things could have been equal?
Probably KCP. I think Bradley's a little overrated on the defensive. So mm-hmm. And I mean, that could be said about KCP, which as well, which we'll get into. But I think that KCP, again, that ability to come off of a screen and let it fly, I think that that's something that, you know, Avery Bradley is one of those guys we've seen, and there have been a few of these guys, Jay Crowder and some others, that as soon as they leave Brad Stevens' system in Boston, they're not quite the same guy. And we saw that. I think the stock on Avery Bradley is lower at this point than it was at the same point last year. So probably by just a hair, I'd pick KCP. Sounds like you agree.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think KCP is a little bigger, which is kind of a nice thing there. That was always kind of the problem that Boston had in the Eastern Conference, was that, or in the playoffs, that they just, Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley were too small to play consistently together, and you know, KCP being a little bit bigger helps there. What really briefly were you hoping to see from KCP? I think you and I are on the same page here, but it was just pretty much shooting and defense and just being a good Laker, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that his, even though he's not that old, he's still just 25. He turned 25 this season. I think it's kind of, he's kind of calcified in who he is. He's not a particularly good ball handler, so I did not expect that. But I expected a guy who could catch and shoot, come off the screens. I like the way he runs the floor and feels the wing. I think he plays really hard, even if he doesn't always play particularly smart. I think on a team that wanted to kind of amp up the pace and build around Lonzo, at least in terms of the pace, I don't like their fit long term in a half court situation. But if you want a guy to run the wing and be able to, you know, catch and shoot or pull up in transition, I think he's as good of an option as any. And again, this is, expectations are a function of like the context, right? Where KCP was a 1 year guy that was not a great player, that probably overplayed his hand passing up a 5 year, $80 million extension from Detroit. Like, he's a good, solid player, and they needed a good, solid player when they had a backcourt that was so young with Lonzo and Hart and Tyler Ennis. Like, without KCP, that would have been a really tough backcourt. So I think my expectations were probably kind of low, and this is found money. And so he was awful at the beginning of the season, but I thought that in totality, by the end, he had really picked it up, and I was happy with what he provided.
Yeah, we'll get into that production here in a second. So KCP finishes the season. He plays 74 games. He had that really rough stretch because of the jail stuff, right? So that was, you know, that was what that was. But he finishes the season averaging about 13 points. To me, the number that really sticks out is 38% on 5.5 attempts per game from three. Like, I didn't think he had that really in him. His previous best was 35% from the same amount of attempts per game. And then defensively, you know, he kind of filled his role and he did what was expected to be done from there. But as you kind of alluded to, he had low expectations, but he probably exceeded those things in the grand scheme of things, right?
Yeah, I think like the one thing I was pleasantly surprised by, I thought he rebounded really well. He was one of the better rebounding twos in the league, and alongside Josh Hart and Lonzo, I thought that was one of the strengths of the team, was their ability to rebound in the backcourt. I didn't think he was that great of an on-ball defender. He wasn't bad. He's just not like kind of the defensive bulldog in that respect. I think he's better when he's chasing guys off a screen on the weak side. He does a good job of getting into trail technique and staying attached to shooters. But on the ball, I thought he was kind of flat-footed and a little too easy to beat. But yeah, he upped his efficiency, you know, and it's funny. I'm looking at his per 36 numbers right now. And the last 4 years, this is what he scored per 36. 14.5, 14.3. 14.9, 14.5.
Yeah.
He's kind of the guy that he is, right? And so he did that. And but all told, he was, I think, as advertised after, especially after finishing that that jail sentence, and, you know, was very strong in the second half of the year and was a big part of that, like, that stretch before the Lakers totally got hurt, where they were playing 500 or better ball from like January 1st on. You know, he was a big part of the reason they were doing that.
Yeah, I completely agree about the on-ball stuff. I thought he was a little more inconsistent than swinging one way or the other. You know,
he wasn't like bad all the time, but he wasn't always locked in.
Yeah, I thought the technique, and like you said, with being flat-footed was a problem. I thought he got a little too handsy. Like, as he got more into it, like, I thought it was always pretty easy to see early on in the game that he was going to be locked in defensively, and it was when his hands were well behind him, basically, and he was playing defense with his feet. And then on games that it looked like he was going to struggle, it was going to be the opposite of that, where his feet looked kind of lazy and he would pick up a foul here or there on a hand check call that he really didn't have to make. Offensively, though, the one thing that, if he is, and we'll keep on building on these points here in a second, but the thing that I really want him to really focus on is the shot selection. You know, the pull up jumper, the pull up threes in transition. Like, he had one or two of those per game that you knew it was coming because the Lakers had momentum, and if they were playing at home, he kind of wanted to fire in that dagger. And I thought that was, as a group collectively, something that the Lakers all kind of struggled with throughout the season, that they were
hit those Kobe shots.
Yeah, like everybody wanted to land this haymaker, when really the Lakers are built as a team to just kind of jab away at a guy and wind up beating them by a body blow. And I thought KCP was one of the top offenders of guys who really I thought would try to land that haymaker, but I don't know if he's really capable of landing that haymaker. Is that something he can learn, do you think, or do you think he is who he is from that standpoint?
I think it's a ball handling thing, honestly. I think that those guys that are able to do that, one thing, and I don't know if we're planning on this, but we should totally do a Luke Walton recap. I would love to do that. For some reason, Luke would always draw plays for KCP in like Lakers down one with 8 seconds left. And it was so maddening because it was like, that's the point of the game too, where he's not great at like back cutting over plays and, you know, reading a defense, being too aggressive and using that against them. And so, you know, he'd be kind of swarmed and he would take this really difficult shot that had very little to no chance of going in. And they just kept like going to that well over and over again. And I know Lakers didn't have a ton of on ball scoring talent, but he was just not the guy. And I just don't see him being that type of guy, just because I don't think he can handle the ball well enough to be able to create his own shot. And I think that's a necessary component of kind of being able to land those haymakers that you were talking about.
Yeah. The other thing too, that I would like to see from him, is something that we kind of saw it in stretches, but for somebody who was making as much as he was and was one of the few kind of veteran presences that he was on the team, I thought he was really effective and efficient with using his voice, right? And I don't know if it's a less is more kind of thing from a KCP. Like, if he's a major voice in your locker room, I don't know what that says about your locker room. But I thought, for the most part, outside of the jail stuff, because that is not a great place. That is not a great place to really go for team culture and team building. But when he was with the team, I didn't have any complaints about the way that he handled himself there.
For sure. And I think he's a guy that's more vocal on the court than he is in the locker room. He's a really shy person, and I even saw that like with his interactions with his teammates in the locker room, and like they liked him, right? They busted his chops about, you know, what's your jail cell like and all of that, you know, like that type of trash talk, right? But he's not like a gregarious, outgoing personality. But on the court, I thought he was one of the better communicators on the defensive end, especially, where even if he was not the guy directly involved in the play, like in transition defense, you got to talk and sometimes cross match. Like, you got to pick up a guy who's not your guy, right? But that's on that play he needs to be, you know? And I thought he did a good job of things like that. So I think in terms of like, I think for the most part, he was a professional on the court. I can't speak to the you know, prison stuff and all of the details revolving that around that. But I thought that he was part of the Lakers' defensive identity, even if as an individual defender, he had some of those sloppy habits that we've both been talking about.
That's a great way to put that. All right, we're going to take another quick second here. When we come back, we are going to talk about whether there is a role for him to fill with the Lakers, with everything that they're looking forward to. And we'll, I mean, look, the elephant in the room on all of these things is Paul George. Like, that's just, that's going to be something that you have to take into account here. And so we'll briefly touch on, you know, ways that Paul George would legitimately make the Lakers better because he wouldn't be KCP. Boy, that sounded harsh.
KCP's a solid player. He's going to have a 10-12 year career in the NBA, and if he's not back with the Lakers, he'll land on his feet somewhere. But Paul George is really good, and if you get the chance to upgrade there, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it than the Lakers would be better because they have, yeah, anywho. But is there a role for KCP, even if they, let's say they do land Paul George, because that's kind of how I find myself operating at this point until further notice. But if the Lakers do land Paul George and they, you know, they wind up bringing back Julius Randle, is there room in the rotation there for KCP, or would you just give those minutes to Josh Hart and see what he can do and maybe try to find a better way to spend what little cap space they would have left over elsewhere on the roster?
You know, I think it's a function of the context that I think it's difficult to see a scenario with KCP being back if Paul George comes. Mm-hmm. I think KCP could be a good like third guard on a contending team. Ideally, he's a guy that comes off the bench and plays 20 to 25 minutes and does it well and does what he does well, but is not a starter necessarily, but a high-end backup. But with Paul George, the thing about the Lakers situation is they're going all out for this two max thing, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be this year. They would love for it to be LeBron and Paul George, but they also got their eyes on Kawhi Leonard in 2019. On the other end of things, a guy like KCP got a nice one-year deal, but he's looking for some security, some, you know, guaranteed cash over several years. So if you can't really offer KCP a three-year contract. Like, say, this is a buyer's market, right? So contracts are going to be a little suppressed this summer. If you can get KCP for like 3 years, $30 million, that's a good contract, right? But that cuts into the cap space that you would need to, say, go after Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard next summer. And so if they get Paul George this summer, I think they've got it all lined up for, hey, we've got your number two star. We've got this young group of talented guys. We just need you, superstar, whoever that would be, to come in and fill it out and make this a championship team. All the other pieces are there. Harder to do that when you've got KCP under the salary cap. So I think it's more of a roster construction thing than anybody else. Do you see that from a different angle, or is that an obstacle in your eyes?
Yeah, I think this is – it'd be one thing if the Lakers were trying to accomplish or figure out their complete rebuild this coming offseason, right? Like if they were just operating as to this is the team that we're going to have moving forward and 2019 kind of be damned and we'll continue to try to fill out our roster then if need be. But we want to take care of everything this upcoming offseason. Then I think KCP makes a little bit more sense. But look, I sat there and I watched Tyler Ennis play an entire season of NBA basketball now way too long. And
let's recap.
I can't wait to do a Tyler Ennis review. Like that's gonna be a thing. It might be like 5 minutes long, but it's gonna be a thing. The way I kind of see it is I think KCP would be a luxury, and given what the Lakers are trying to accomplish this year and next year, I don't think they have much time to really focus on luxuries right now. And personally, what I would like to see, especially while we you know, if Lonzo continues to have that kind of knee thing and if his shot doesn't necessarily come around that we want, I think the Lakers really need to focus on a second solid veteran backup point guard. And I think the money would be better spent there than on KCP when you have a Josh Hart that's already going to be as able to fill those KCP minutes as you would like to, given how little you have to spend on Josh Hart versus KCP. Did that make sense?
No, it did. Like, Hart is kind of cut from a similar cloth to KCP. They have some differences, but a lot of the arguments that you can make for KCP, you can just be like, well, we've already got a guy that's making like less than $2 million next season that can do almost all of those things and can do some other things maybe even a little bit better. Why would we invest money in this guy? I guess the one thing I would say is the Lakers have a lot of ball handling in their front court, and that may make like a backup to Lonzo, that may make it less necessary that he's a pure point guard type of guy, because if they get Paul George, right, that's not even before we get into LeBron, those are responsibilities. Ingram did a nice job at the point guard spot this year. Julius Randle's a good ball handler. Kuzma showed some flashes of ball handling at the end of the year. So you can – like, remember on Miami, they'd have like Mario Chalmers or guys, teams like that. Like, LeBron's point guards have historically been more, even a George Hill, right, is like less pure point guard. I'm going to go get you 8 assists and I can defend this position and switch on screens and do all these other things, but not be a pure point guard. And in that respect, if you have a team like that, you could theoretically have Josh Hart and KCP play together and not worry about KCP playing point guard on offense, but doing it on defense. I'll throw that right back at you. Did that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. I guess my big thing is I would like the Lakers to have a backup guard who I don't have to be worried about hurting the Lakers the way that I did this season. Right. And like I you know, people, it sounds hot take-ish, but I really honestly feel that if the Lakers had a better backup point guard, if they didn't go into the season with Tyler Ennis as their lead backup point guard, that they could have had a shot at competing for the playoffs. Not making, but competing for the playoffs, a better shot at it, at competing for it longer. And again, it's just these things become all the more important as the team gets better. If you land a Paul George and then you have a disaster backup point guard again, well, that becomes all the more heightened because, well, the team has more at stake. And now you have a larger margin for error because Paul George is better than KCP was last year. And the team as a group, as a unit, is going to be better than it was last year. But I just, the big thing for me is the Lakers, I think, in my opinion, have to really focus on shoring up holes. And I think that hole with KCP is already filled. Let's see what we can do elsewhere on the roster.
Well, I'm curious to see what kind of contract you're going to throw at Isaiah Thomas on the next show we record together.
So, see, like, that, we're still 2 days away from that, and I already want to throw stuff through the computer at you. I was going through the list of, because I'm here on Hoops Hype right now, I'm going through the list of, you know, players and point guards who are available, and he's like, oh, Tyreek Evans, okay, Zach LaVine's going to be too expensive, and oh my God, there's Isaiah Thomas. I can't. Like, it was just, you know, this guttural.
Darius, I got to try and muster up some of my enthusiasm over the next couple of days, because Darius did a pretty good job of talking me out of Isaiah Thomas last time we spoke about him, so I'm going to try and forget as much of that as possible before the next show we record.
Sounds good, man. Well, till that next time, you'll be back on the show for Friday's show. But thanks for hopping on. I think we came to the conclusion here that KCP was a pretty good Laker while it lasted. But, you know, I said on last show that I'd be more open to Brook Lopez being a Laker moving forward than I am with KCP. Would you ride with that, or would you just say, well, let's just see what else is out there on the market in general?
No, I agree with that. I think Lopez's ability to stretch the floor really helped Julius out, and I think he was a good pick and roll partner with Brandon Ingram. I just released a video on that, and, you know, has the ability to go inside and score, and he's a solid defender. Lopez is a solid player that you probably don't have to give as much money to, at least over as many years as you need to give for KCP. So both in role and probably contract expectation, Lopez is probably the better choice.
Yep. All right, so that'll do it for KCP. It was fun, KCP, while it lasted. Best of luck moving forward. Thank you, Pete, for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, if you guys have missed any of the reviews thus far, if you've missed any of the mailbag stuff thus far, that's all there on iTunes and any other platform that you find your podcast. Make sure you guys are subscribed and tuned into Pete's YouTube channel. There's some great stuff coming up and have already gone up there. I've been watching the Brandon Ingram stuff. The decision-making one in in specifically was really good. That was really enlightening. And we'll keep on bringing some of that stuff. We'll tie some of that stuff back into the show when we don't have to go through every player on the Lakers roster and review them. So thanks, Pete. Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.